Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
You're John Chespigon.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to the Theater Podcast. Intimate personal conversations with theater's biggest names. And now part of the Broadway Podcast Network. This episode is with Andrew Polk, who may or may not be a household name to you, but he has been a working actor in the New York scene for decades. This guy actually just made his Broadway debut at the age of 54 in The Band's Visit, and he was Avram, just this wonderful role, very comedic role. But if you Google him or IMDb him or IBDb him, you'll see he's just been cast over time as like the bad guy, the dark guy. He's in Billions right now. He plays the sidekick to Alan Cummings in Instinct. He just has this career where he's just worked and worked. And like I said, he's got these really dramatic roles on his resume, but he's really funny and a really personable guy on the outside. And it just kind of is interesting. He tells a story in the episode of basically through kind of luck a little bit, he fell into The Band's Visit and it allowed him to make his Broadway debut at age 54, like I said. So an incredible story, a great conversation. Before we get going, as always, I encourage you to visit me online at thetheaterpodcast.com or ttp.fm for short. Please show your support. Patrons have allowed me to start adding transcriptions for the most popular episodes. So I'm going back on the website and getting all that taken care of. So thank you to those who have been supporting the podcast so far. You can check out the benefit tiers via ttp.fm/Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Now, everyone, please enjoy this episode with Andrew Polk.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Here you go, 1, 2, 3.
Currently co-starring on Alan Cumming's Instinct on CBS as Alan's wacky sidekick, he just finished his Emmy-winning run as Avram in The Band's Visit on Broadway. He is also in the midst of roles on Showtime's Billions and City on a Hill, in addition to Amazon's Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. He's the Broadway guy on pretty much every television show, including past appearances on some of my favorites, 30 Rock, Law & Order, The Closer, The Blacklist, Person of Interest, The Good Wife, Madam Secretary, House of Cards, and so many more that I had to leave off because we'd be here all day. Andrew Polk, welcome to the Theater Podcast.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Thank you for coming out. So tell me from the very beginning, let's start with Little Andy.
Little Andy.
Little Andy, where did you get into performing?
Little Andy was an annoying show-off, and my parents didn't know what to do with me, pretty much. But I didn't, you know, I did a lot of different things, but really when I discovered that this is what I wanted to do was, I grew up in San Francisco, and they have a professional theater company there called the American Conservatory Theater, and mm-hmm. they had a program for high school students. So after school, I would take a bus into San Francisco from Berkeley, where I lived, a couple times a week, and just take classes, and I was just, that was it. And my mom, who didn't want me to be an actor, she just didn't know what to do with me, because I was constantly putting on shows and imitating people, and I think she just, out of desperation, got me into some kind of acting class, and unfortunately for her, it stuck.
Why didn't she want you to be an actor?
I don't know. You know, I think she, you know, I think she always wanted me to be anything but like a lawyer. I think I was a musician at one point. She wanted me to pursue music, so I never listened to my mom. So it all worked out.
And what did your dad want you to do?
My dad didn't care. He was fine. He was pretty supportive. They were both supportive, ultimately, you know. But it didn't matter. You know, it didn't matter. I was going to do what I was going to do.
Right. Yeah, we were talking about kids a second ago before we started recording. And yeah, my kids are little. I feel like, you know, I'll give them the advice at some point of, you know, whatever the modern version of, like, you should be a doctor or a lawyer is,
right,
which, you know, now is probably be a programmer, learn how to write some code. But yeah, but me being so into theater as much as I am,
right,
it's inevitable they're going to try something.
I know. Isn't it funny? Because, like, my daughter right now, she wants to be an astrophysicist. And I'm like, yes, please. But I know that she's just going to end up being a screenwriter or something. You know what I mean? Or she's going to direct movies just the way that's probably inevitable. Both of my wife, Zoe, who's a wonderful playwright, and I'm an actor. You know, what do you think we're going to make? Astrophysicists? I mean, it's possible. But
some kids, they're like, I see the struggle my parents go through, and there's no way I want to do that. So they do go be the doctor.
Yeah. I don't know. Parenting's funny. It's just, I feel like my challenge is to try to get out of their way and just let them not mess them up too much.
I'm going to take that as advice, actually.
Plus, that's what I'm learning, you know. Like, what I learned is I started to figure out that they don't listen to anything you say.
Yeah.
They don't.
Yeah.
But they watch what you do very carefully. So they see me, for instance, doing the band's visit and leaving every day, which is hard for them. But they see me doing it for something I love. You know, that's an action that's going to, I think, will stick with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
My dad laughed every day to do something that he loved. You know what I mean?
What did he do?
Huh?
What did he do?
I'm talking about me.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's what they'll say. Yeah.
Oh, so. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And well, what did you get when you were a kid? What did you get out of performing? What was it that really spoke to you about being the show-off? I mean, thinking back as an adult?
Yeah, it's funny how the nature of what you do tends to change a little bit. But definitely, the appeal was to become someone else. I just loved it. I loved escaping into other people and doing all the things I could do to do that. You know, I was always pretty good with accents and, you know, I liked all the external things, you know, just to be someone else and all the craft that went into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, well, it takes a lot of work. And okay, so you went to Tufts University.
I did.
Which is in Massachusetts.
It is.
Which is, there's performing in Massachusetts. I guess it's close enough to New York.
Well, you know, my parents, you know, I applied to some drama schools too out of high school and got in, and or more like well-known theater places like NYU. But I went to Tufts, and I'm so glad I did because it, you know, I really wanted to get a good education, and they happened to have a very small but really good drama department. So, I mean, I ended up going to college with these amazing people like Hank Azaria and Oliver Platt, Bob Krakauer, Joel Bischoff, you know, people who are really active and successful in the business now. We had this incredible small group. And I just, what that allowed me to do is I just did 4 or 5 plays every single year. And I learned a few things, took classes, but basically I was in that drama department really just doing it. Mm-hmm. And there's some value to that, you know?
Yeah, well, you were working hard, and then out of that got a Fulbright scholarship.
Yep.
Right? So you went over to London
at
the Webber Douglas Academy of Dramatic Arts.
Yes.
And what happened at that point? Like, how did you get that, and then how did that change your trajectory? Did it at all?
You know, I don't know if it changed my trajectory. My trajectory is my trajectory. I didn't get into Yale. I didn't have much of a plan. My plan was get into Yale drama school, and then I don't know. And then I heard about that there was a Fulbright scholarship for performing artists in London. I thought, well, great. And I'm so grateful I got that because it was a full ride and all expenses paid and a stipend. And I got this great British theater training, which was different than I think I would have gotten here, which is quite physical, quite rigorous, kind of external based, I'd say, classical theater training. And then when I was ready, I'm ready to come back. And I got very lucky when I came back. I got a job right away. But it really prepped me for the rigors of theater, you know, which is if you're lucky enough to be working in a big theater for a long time, you really needed those physical tools that I got. So that was great.
Well, in London too, I think the musicals are not as big over there, right? So
yeah,
they want the drama, they want the straight plays, they want. Intellectual.
It's a whole other thing too, you know, like such a tradition of theater there. When I was there, you could go to the National Theater and see a play with Ian McKellen for £5.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. I saw everything. And there was I remember seeing Shakespeare at the Royal Shakespeare Company and, with sold out audiences and people gasping and hanging on every word that was being said because they know it. You know, they know these plays inside out, and that was such a great thing for me to experience, you know.
Wow. Yeah, so then coming back here, I read off so many of your TV shows in the intro there. Coming back here, were you trying to go back into theater at that point, or how did TV sort of fall in your lap?
Honestly, the TV stuff, and I'm really grateful for it, and I've been really busy doing it for the last, but it's really been only the last, mainly the last 10 years. That I started, for whatever reason, coming into my own on film and TV. I definitely went for. I moved to New York, and I wanted to do theater. You know, TV at the time. You may not know you're a young guy, but there was no TV here. It was Law and Order. I mean, that was it. Now there's 67 shows being shot here. So the business has changed here in terms of the film production, which is fantastic. But back then, there wasn't much. And so really, it was theater. And that's what I did when I could, you know.
So what year was that when you came back? Do you remember?
19. I came back in 1985. Yeah. And that's when I got Biloxi Blues, right when I came back.
Right. So 85 to 2017.
Yeah.
2017 was your Broadway debut.
Yeah. So I am an overnight success, clearly. took me 30-some years to get here. But yeah, I know. And it's the craziest thing, too, because I mean, if you were to tell me as little as 3 years ago that I would be, you know, have a principal role in a 10-time Tony Award-winning musical where I have my own number and I'm dancing and singing, I would be laughing at you because that's just not where things were headed.
Right.
And so, you know, it's been the craziest ride.
out of everything I read off at the beginning, 30 Rock mm-hmm. was the only, I think, yeah, the only true comedy that was in my opening spiel here. Yeah. But you were funny in The Band's Visit. But on TV, you're not cast as the funny guy. You're this dramatic, really serious
guy. Yeah.
Serious guy.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think I can do a lot of different things. I mean, Instinct is pretty funny. I think. I mean, he's an eccentric, weird guy. I mean, who wouldn't be? You're a coroner. You know what I mean?
Right.
But that's comedic in maybe a subtle way. But you're right. And I think it has something to do with the kind of shows that are being shot here. There aren't a lot of... I mean, I'm doing Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and that's a comedy. And whether I'm funny or not, that's entirely up to you to judge. But
is it a comedic role in Maisel?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So you're finally, morphing into this new chapter of your life now?
I hope so. I like to be funny, think I'm funny. Sometimes I don't feel funny now, but after this coffee, I will be funnier. honestly, I think it's a good observation. I think there's not a lot of comedy shot here, if you think about it. A lot of it's done in L.A., and I'm here, so...
Yeah.
But
do you like comedy more than drama or just whatever pays the bills at this point?
Well, it's so funny because when you're talking about the differences in those two things in theater, it's a much different deal than on TV and film. It's weird because in TV and film, there's no immediate feedback. It could be funny if the editing is good and the writing is good and it's in the right hands, but you don't know.
That's a good point, too, because editing, you can edit the comedy out of a funny bit if you're not edited right.
Absolutely, or vice versa.
Right.
The guys at Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, they're absolute geniuses at it. They know exactly how to make it funny in a cinematic way. So,
right. Yeah, the timing. I mean, timing is pretty much everything in comedy.
Absolutely. Timing's everything. And so... Yeah, I mean, but you get that immediate, that immediate hit when you're in theater. It's just so great. And of course, it's nothing like a well-earned laugh
mm-hmm.
on stage.
And so you came back in 85, and then you were working, but do you consider yourself having to struggle at all, or were you just consistently going from gig to gig for the next little while?
No, I definitely was some struggles there. I mean, I always worked pretty consistently, but... I think maybe the hardest part was I got a job right away out of drama school, and it was to do the national tour of Biloxi Blues, mm-hmm. which I did with Neil Simon and Gene Sachs and these amazing guys. And I thought, wow, what's the big deal? It's not that hard. Everyone's talking about how hard it is to be an actor. I'm making more money than my dad. And so I thought, it's not so hard. It's great. And then, of course... I came back to New York after that tour was over, and no one knew who I was, and I didn't know anybody, and I had to really start over, but I had kind of a, I don't want to say an attitude, but maybe I did, just like, I just thought there was something coming to me, and there wasn't. I had to start at the beginning. I had to make my contacts. I had to really figure out who was who and do workshops and meetings and find my theater community where I could, stay sharp.
Mm-hmm.
And I ultimately did that, but that was a hard time to really find my bearings, get my bearings in New York. It took a couple years, and then I did.
Did you have survival jobs during this time?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I was a waiter for 3 days before they fired me.
Where?
Oh my God.
Do you remember?
Yeah, but it's kind of, well, I was like, after the tour, I saved all this money, and I was running through it because I just went out to eat all the time, and I went, so maybe going out to eat all the time is too expensive, so maybe I need a job or something. So I went and got a waiter job down the street at this place called Louise's, and one of the things you had to do was make your own desserts.
Yeah.
And I remember this one thing, this raspberry swirl I was supposed to make, a little nice vanilla raspberry pattern the waiters had to make.
Oh, yeah. I worked at Ruby Tuesday for a hot month, and we made our own desserts, too. Yeah, yeah.
So I might have had some anger issues at the moment, but I brought these really annoying, it was a very sort of entitled group of yuppie people. And I wasn't digging them. And they asked for the raspberry swirl. And I kind of was floppy with the swirl. Like I went, you know, I just made a mess of it, kind of, I suppose. And I brought it to this guy. And this guy looked at me and said, excuse me, it's supposed to be a raspberry swirl. This is not a swirl. And I told him what to do right there. And I told him where he could go. And I got fired right there. That was it. That was the last time I waited tables. I had this great job at a law firm where I pretended I knew how to program. Word processing back then. And it was doing macros and stuff like that. And they wanted to know, could I do macros? Because they had to send out these very complicated documents all the time. And I'm like, yeah. And so I had no idea how to do it. And I asked the guy who was leaving the job how to do it. And he told me. And that lasted like years because they were amazing because I could just leave to do a job, come back. They gave me a laptop. I did it on the road.
Wow.
It became a good survival job. I started a theater company. And I was still able to kind of do what they needed me to do. And so that was a really good survival job. So I did have some of those.
That's fun. We're gonna talk about your theater company in a little bit, but I want to talk about the band's visit right now. So obviously won the Tony for Best Musical last year, 2018.
Yes, it did.
And that was phenomenal. I saw it. I saw it with all the original cast. So of course, I saw you in it. Like I said a second ago, you made your Broadway debut, I think, at the age of 54, if my math is correct, right? Yeah. So do you feel that it was? I mean, you see these kids making their Broadway debuts in their 20s, sure, like late 20s, and I think this morning I read a tweet from Jessica Vosk, you know, former she was just left Wicked, saying that she made her debut at 30, I believe. And she was like, you can do it. You can keep going. And it's never too late. But that's 30.
30, yeah. She's a child. Yeah.
So you made yours at 54.
I know.
What made you keep going? I guess what I'm saying is, like, did you ever sort of just put that out of like, oh, I guess this is not going to happen?
Well, I was, over the last, good while, I've been doing a lot of TV and film. And that's been great, and I've been making my living doing that. And you're right. I think the idea that I would be on Broadway was something I always wanted to do seems so remote that I kind of stopped thinking about it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's so perfect, the band's visit, the way it happened, because it was so weird and out of the blue how it happened, how I got the job.
How'd you get it?
I was... a friend of mine works at the Atlantic Theater Company, and she was gathering a bunch of sort of TV-ish actors to just sit around the table and read the new version of the book for Itamar Moses of the band's visit. And I knew Itamar because I'd actually hired him a couple times to work at my theater company and love him. And David Cromer was there, I was just a huge fan of David's work. So I said, sure. And I went, and it was just sitting around the table with wonderful actors, but they weren't musical theater actors. And I think they did that on purpose because I think they don't want anyone in the reading to have any designs on the future of, they just wanted a good read.
Right, right.
And all of a sudden, I didn't even know it was musical. I honestly didn't know. And in the middle of reading this thing, this bald guy had a boombox, and he started, every once in a while, press the boombox and songs would play. And I'm like, oh my God, it's a musical. And that was David Yazbek.
Wow.
And he was just, had demoed some of the songs and was just shoving them in there to see how it would fit with the new book.
Mm-hmm.
So we read it, went well. And then as I left, David Cromer said, do you sing? And I was like, yeah.
I can do macros.
I can do macros. Exactly. Yes, I sing. And so there ensued... four auditions where they really, they put me through the ringer.
Well, what was it like? What were their...
I had to do, learn the song and do the sides, but then I had to bring in an instrument, and I happened to play the cello, So I boned up on the cello, I had a nice little Vivaldi that I had prepared for them. And I played the cello, sang my song, did my sides, my scene. And I was so proud of my cello playing when they asked me to do that. And I thought it went really well. I asked if they wanted to hear anything else. And then David Yazbek said, no. I learned later he's a cellist, of course, on top of everything else that he can do brilliantly. And then the final coup de grace was they stuck me in a room for an hour with the musical director, Andrea Grody, just me and her. And she took me through, I think, every vocal exercise that had been invented. They were kicking the tires. And I guess it went well because I got it.
Did you have to do the accent at that time?
Yeah.
And your wife is Israeli, right?
My wife is Israeli.
But she ended up being the dialect coach for the show.
I know, completely separately. I honestly had nothing to do with that. That other people had referred her to the producers separately. It did mean that I got a lot of notes at home. It's a tough accent. And I consider myself really good at accents, but that one was hard. But once you get it.
Yeah, I was watching something you had online explaining the accent while you were in the show. And it didn't occur to me that it is very French sounding. And you were talking about that, but it's almost French, but not French.
I know. I had a funny conversation with Meryl Streep. Sorry, name dropping, but I did. She came back to see the show. And I was so blown away that she was there. And she started talking to me about the accent. She's like, I said, you should play an Israeli sometime. She said, oh, I don't know, that accent's so hard. I went, I'm thinking, you're Meryl Streep. You know what I mean? You can do it. But I said, so we had this conversation about how it is kind of French to the ear, but it's not really. It's a combination of things that, to the untrained ear, it sounds French, but it's not.
Does your wife have an accent?
No.
No?
No, she doesn't have an accent at all.
So you don't, I guess what I was saying, you don't hear it all the time at home.
Well, yeah, but I hear it. I hear it. Like, I'm about to go to Israel in a week and a half, and we go often because her whole family is there. Right. So I will hear it, quite a bit of it.
Do you ever do it for them? And they're like, horrible. You're horrible. You can't do that.
No, they're like, hey, it's very good. You sound like you are from here. So it's good. And I had one guy say, Israeli guy came who I know. He said, Andy, I see you in the band's visit and you look so macho, and you're not macho. And see, that's very Israeli, by the way. They just tell it like it is. You're not macho.
Well, you're
all right. Thank you very much.
Well, the body language in the character Avram is isn't like an aggressive guy, right?
Yeah, there's funny. I got a lot of input. I took a lot of stuff from like some of my relatives, my father-in-law. There's this one politician that I love. His name is Yair Lapid, and he's actually running, I think, on a ticket in the upcoming elections. But he's like, I actually ended up just coincidentally, when I was there, working out with the dude at a local gym. And he's like a TV personality. He's just got an aggressive way of being. He just stands there like a bull. So I thought, bull, that's good. A bull is a good, physical vocabulary for this guy. I incorporated some of that stuff into Avram.
Yeah, Avram, he was all over the stage.
In
a good way.
Yeah, I'd love the Israelis because they're just not, they're just tell it like it is. It's almost like they didn't get the subtle, polite class in school. There's just no pretense about them and it makes me love them.
What about stage door feedback? Did you get a lot of interesting comments?
I got a lot of interesting comments. I got a lot of Israelis coming up to me, starting to speak to me in Hebrew, which was a big compliment.
Yeah.
I don't speak Hebrew, much to the disappointment of my wife. B, it was a compliment to me because they thought I was credible enough that I was going to start blabbing to them in Hebrew.
Sounded like a real accent.
And I would have to say, ani lo medaber ivrit. I don't speak Hebrew. They're like, oh, never mind.
And they're like, oh, screw this guy.
Exactly. Yeah. But so that was a lot of fun. I got, you know, that whole stage door, if you haven't been on Broadway for so long like me, and then you all of a sudden get on Broadway, the whole stage door scene is such a trip. It was such an unexpected experience every night. It's packed, you know, outside with young people. You know, and I love that. And some people would say, you know, you have a beautiful voice. I'm like, you know, never in my life would I think I would be hearing something like that, you know. Or, you know, very nice to hear that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's interesting that the show, I wouldn't have expected it to speak to young people.
Me neither.
As much as, I guess, my age and older. I'm 38.
Right.
And it has more of a worldly sense to it than just like a singing and dancing musical.
I think there's a lot of young people out there who are just turned on by musicals.
Yeah.
And it may not be just the band's visit. It's just that I got the sense that of excitement by a lot of young people, which did surprise me too, for being part of a musical, you know.
I went to see it because I just wanted to see Tony Shalhoub because I knew him from Wings.
Right.
Like that was where I came from.
Right.
I was like,
right.
Oh, I just want to see Tony. He's a great actor. You know, of course, Wings and then Monk and other things.
Yeah. Yeah. He's when I grow up, I want to be like Tony Shalhoub. Just an absolute gem.
Yeah. He and Katrina.
Both of them. Yeah.
So such nice people, it seems.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so very cool. And then on the TV and film side, you're Freddie Eisen.
Yeah.
Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Eisen, yeah. On Showtime's Billions. So now you're working with Paul Giamatti.
Yeah.
Because this character is Paul's lawyer.
I'm like his Michael Cohen, it seems like. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So Paul Giamatti, nice guy to work with.
Again, another gem of a human being. Like, and I'm not making it up. Just an absolute sweetheart, generous, talented, super hard worker. You know, I have nothing but praise for that guy. You know, just in the way he works with you, and just a great guy.
I envy those situations where you get to work with somebody who's known for being so good. Because like when I used to perform, I would prepare my own sides, especially a dialogue. I would prepare and kind of, especially when I'm just memorizing things and I'm not working off of somebody, I, in my mind, have a way that they're responding to me and then I'm responding to that. And then, of course, when you get in person, you don't want to assume, you want to live in the moment. But then somebody like a Meryl or a Paul Giamatti or somebody just brings these things that you would have never occurred to you.
Right.
I envy being in those situations where you're just like, holy shit, this is why they are so good.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's right. I think he's brilliant. And he works his tush off. I can tell you firsthand because we, you know, whenever there was a spare minute, and there were many, he would come up to me and say, you want to run things? Let's run it again. You know me, I'll just keep running it. Let's just keep running it. We would run lines for 14 hours, you know.
Wow.
So he's constantly working. I have a lot of admiration for him. And I agree with you. I think he's one of those guys who just brings something different that keeps it interesting.
Yeah, and then okay. So then in Mrs. Maisel,
but that, I'm sorry. You know, I just want to say one thing. It's just that show was really interesting because I was a huge. You know, my wife and I were binging that show. We were like totally into that show, and then I got on it. You know, I've never had that experience before. And I'm like, mm-hmm. I'm in this show now, but I'm really a fan of the show. I'm like, I kind of want to know what's going to happen
right.
as much as anybody.
So now you get the script. You're like, oh my God, I can't say anything, but it's cool. Do your kids know kind of what's going on? How old are they now?
8 and 5. No, I'm a constant disappointment. Unless I get on something like, I don't know, Sesame Street. I mean, these shows I'm on are so adult. You know, they're just like, they saw the band's visit. I think, understood most of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was cool. But, you know, TV and film, I think I auditioned for some big child show voiceover recently. And my daughter wanted to know if I got that. That all she cared about. And when I said, no, I didn't, she was like, oh, when are you going to get on a show? kids, Dad. So that's...
Yeah, I guess that's true. They're not old enough to like even be allowed to watch something with a lot of sex or murder.
No. They can't see any of the shows I'm on. You know, Instinct, funny show, but all I do is talk about the dead bodies I'm looking at.
Right.
So maybe not. Not for the kids.
Jeez. Yeah. Gosh. Yeah. So you're just like going away and not getting on kid shows right now. No wonder. Yeah. They think they're like, Daddy.
Yeah.
I don't see you on TV. What are you doing with your
day? You know, just tell them something.
Well, they can watch. Can they watch Maisel? Except for the, I guess the first
episode.
I
swear like a sailor on that show.
Do you?
Yeah.
Well, I guess not then.
All I do is scream at Alex Bornstein and, you know.
Yeah.
Drop the F-bomb the whole time.
Oh, that's another great one too. Yeah, Alex.
Yeah.
Yeah, gosh.
She's great.
But working with her would be fun.
Love her. She's so great. All my stuff is with her, yeah.
And then it looks like you've got a good relationship with CBS too.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess, right? I mean, they haven't fired me yet, so that's good. Yeah, CBS owns Showtime.
Right, right. Is it the same casting director or directors that kind of do everything? Or how?
Well, there's a wonderful guy named Mark Sachs who does a lot of the CBS shows who brings me in. And I've booked a lot of CBS shows, which is great. And but the Showtime stuff, no, varies. Let me say, they have different people for the Showtime, but CBS owns Showtime.
Right, right. But I guess if they're not talking to each other, then it's kind
You'd like to think there's a grand plan. Like, it'd be fun to think, CBS is talking about me. They're like, yeah, let's get them on all these shows. But I wonder if there really is a grand plan or if it's just worked out that way.
Yeah. Well, you've got like tons and tons of credits. I mean, you've been working forever. And then you've even paid your dues in New York and you've been on Law & Order.
I've been on Law & Order. That's no longer a badge of honor, but it used to be.
Are you dead body number 3 on Law & Order?
And then House of Cards.
House of Cards too, two years.
Yep.
Yeah, so you've got a good run on TV. Are you continuing down that path? Or are you still, do you even have time to audition for theater at this point?
You know, there have been some, since the end of the band's visit, there have been some theater opportunities, which I'm very fortunate to have, that I've passed on just because I'm definitely open to the right thing. But after doing the band's visit for the better part of 3 years, it has to be the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, my wife might divorce me. And so the answer to your question is, yeah, I'm going to continue down all paths. I think there are things I want to have happen in terms of television and film. I'd love to see some of these characters develop because I'm having so much fun doing these different characters and continue to do more of that. And if the right theater opportunity shows up, then I remain open. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's like I'm old enough now to have known that you know, once you start having rigid plans about what you want to do, you got to be open to the thing you don't expect to happen. Perfect example, band's visit. You know what I mean? That just really came out of nowhere.
Yeah, it just fell in your lap.
In a way.
And are you still involved with your, so your theater, the Cape Cod Theater Project, right?
Right. I founded that. Yeah.
So are you still involved with that?
I am not. I ran it for 17 years in the summers. And a wonderful director named Hal Brooks, he runs it. And I was on the board for many years and I'm still on the advisory board. So I'm involved, but not running it anymore.
Well, what is that? So 17 years you ran it. So
yeah.
When did you actually found it?
1995. That sounds about right. And I was a member of Circle Rep Company.
Yeah.
And so a lot of those people like Michael Warren Powell and Lanford Wilson and Marshall Mason, you know, William Esper, Craig Lucas, William Hoffman, Craig Lucas, Paula Vogel. They were all sort of around when I was there. And we used a lot of them to just help found it up on Cape Cod to develop new plays because that's what I knew how to do from Circle Rep.
Mm-hmm.
And I used a lot of these actors too, like some great actors like Amy Ryan and, you know, a lot of people started that with me that were really terrific. And we started it, I mean, literally had no idea what I was doing. And me and this other wonderful actor, Jim Burkita, started it. And it was immediately successful. And, you know, we developed all these four plays one summer. And then we realized, what do we do now? We got to keep doing it every year. And we did. We just kept.
Is it original plays or were you?
New plays, developing new plays.
No kidding.
For instance, the Cape Cod Theater Project developed What the Constitution Means to Me and Hillary and Clinton.
No kidding.
Two shows that made it to Broadway this year.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, so they've developed, I don't know, it's got to be like, they just did their 25th year this summer, and they've got to have developed like 80 plays or something like that over all the years.
How did you choose what you wanted to work on? Did you find like Heidi Schreck, or did she come to you and say, I've got this idea?
I'm not going to take credit for that. That's Hal Brooks who did that. And he's now the artistic director. You solicit certain plays. You have an opportunity to read a lot of unsolicited plays if you want, but that's a rough road to go down because it's thousands of plays, possibly. So I would usually read 300-400 plays a year to choose four.
Wow.
And a lot of them I would solicit. Certainly a lot of the agents would solicit you and pitch you. And it was a combination of what relationships you had with directors and writers and playwrights. And you develop relationships with certain writers. So I would have a lot of repeat playwrights. Mm-hmm. You had Annie Baker up there, Paula Vogel, you know.
Yeah.
We had a lot of great writers.
That's really, really cool.
And great actors. Just great.
And do you still teach too? Because you're teaching at NYU and in AADA, American Academy of Dramatic Arts.
Right. I've taken a little break from teaching, so I'm not right now. But I was until right before the band's visit. And then it was too much. It was just too much with the theater and the television.
And the kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. You still want to have a home life.
Yeah. Exactly. So right now I'm not. I do some private coaching, but really no.
What would you teach? Just acting or auditions or?
I did both. I did a lot of audition technique, teaching that, and I also taught. I taught acting as well. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed that.
But you do have a new TV series in development.
Yes, I do.
Can you tell us anything about that?
Yeah, I've written something that hopefully I'm going to be, it's in development and it's going to be produced soon, a web series. It's written as a web series. It's called The Dog Park. And it's about the people at dog parks, not the dogs themselves. In fact, the dogs are never seen.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's always shot from the waist up?
Yeah. Or they're, you know, you get, you know, jerked out of frame by a dog's leash. or a slobbery ball will hit you in the head. Yeah. But you won't actually, it's really about the really unique, strange, funny, sometimes poignant relationships that you develop at these parks with people.
You have dogs? And, is that where it came from?
Yeah. Yeah, and you have these, and there are these rules, really funny rules that people, they're unwritten ones, and sometimes they're written ones, about what, you know, what to do at a dog park. And some people take on, like, leadership roles in the park, like they're the mayor of the park, you know what I mean? Some people are really strange, but also I've developed, like, really close relationships at the park, and you're a dad. I spend more time walking my dog than I do with my children sometimes.
Yeah.
And so that's weird. Yeah. What's that about?
Yeah.
But and he's not a very good conversationalist either. So it's not, so that's what it's about. So it's really funny and in a kind of a, I don't know, maybe a Curb Your Enthusiasm girls kind of understated,
right,
a quirky way.
Are you in it or just writing, producing?
I think I'm going to be in it, but I'm open. If Brad Pitt wants to play my role, he can do it.
in the story of your life, Brad Pitt would play.
Yeah.
All right. So let's wrap up here, and I will go to my three standard closing questions that I ask every guest on the podcast. The first of which is just very simply, what motivates you?
What motivates me is, what a good question. The joy of the work, really. When you, in terms of work, what motivates me is things that are funny and things that are true, and that's what makes me want to do a project, and something that is true, something that has a hint of its own voice.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what advice would you give to your younger self and younger people listening now starting out down a similar path?
I would advise everyone to not listen to anybody. And if this is something you are, that you really, really feel that you must do and you have a passion for it, just do it. And don't, there's just a lot of voices out there. There were for me, of people telling you how or what you cannot do. And to the extent you can block all those voices out and focus on the positive part of what you love about your work, I think the more successful you'll be. There is no way to, there's no formula. For instance, I don't think I'm better now than I was when I was 30. I'm certainly working so much more than I was. It just may be my time. I don't know. But there's, you know, there's certainly no formula that by 2 years, if you haven't done blah, 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 you should blah, blah, blah. I just don't think it works that way.
Mm-hmm.
I think you walk down the road and don't look at all the shiny objects. Just keep your focus.
All right. So then lastly, if you could only see one show for the rest of your life, but you can see it as many times as you want, what would you see?
That's a good question. One show. If I could see one show. So many shows. I think it would be Amadeus. That might be my favorite show of all.
That's a new one. A new one for the podcast.
Is it?
Yeah, no one said that before.
I'm going to go with Amadeus.
Cool. All right. So as far as I know, you're not very active on social. You do have a Twitter account.
Pathetic. I know. I'm supposed to be better.
So on Twitter, yeah, you're...
I have accounts. I'm there. I just... Twitter is the one with the words, and Instagram is the one with the pictures, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, have your kids tell you what to do there.
Sure, my daughter.
Okay. You can find more of these episodes at thetheaterpodcast.com. Show your support at thetheaterpodcast.com/Patreon. I'm on social at theater_podcast, both on Instagram and Twitter. Please leave a rating and a review when you hear this. It helps everybody out. This is produced by Jillian Hockman, edited by Matthew Hendershot. Thanks to Jukebox the Ghost for the intro and outro music. And finally, thanks to Andrew Polk for being on the podcast.
My absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
No problem. This was fun.
It was.
Take a deep breath, make the world a little colorful.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.